Hello and welcome back everyone to the Hold for Hold Pro Wrestling Podcast. I am here in the closet, the Hold for Hold Pro Wrestling headquarters, as I like to say. It's cramped. I'm sandwiched here in between my shoes and purses, but I'm here to discuss pro wrestling, so I'm happy. Today is going to be, again, a little bit of a truncated episode. I'm still trying to figure out the new format for the podcast, but believe me, you're going to get everything you need to know about pro wrestling. No fluff, just a good chunk of valuable information. This week has been important, to say the least, I guess, right? I mean, we had the rebirth of ROH, which is, to me, a big deal. No official word, though, on what that's going to look like going forward, but we did have the Death Before Dishonor Super Show go down on Saturday, and it was a really good card, but there is some drama, and we will get to that. But then also, perhaps taking a little more importance, this was the first week of the Triple H era, and admittedly, this is Thursday, so I have not seen Friday Night SmackDown because I am not a time traveler like Apollo Crews. So, we can only judge it based on what happened on Raw. And that's kind of a good thing because Raw was pretty good. It was pretty good for what you could expect for a 3-hour show, at least. But yeah, we're going to talk some reactions to this sea change that was Vince McMahon's retirement. And I think that's where we can start off because, pretty important, right? So many AEW and former NXT talents are very hopeful about the future of this big industry change. Fightful had a great write-up where they did a bunch of interviews with these people with former talents and just a good general basis of what the wrestling world is thinking. And a lot of them were saying that they'd most likely still be in the company if this change had happened sooner, which I definitely believe for the most part. I think there was a lot of NXT talent that Vince just didn't get or didn't care, so he, got rid of them. But I think there was a lot there that, they probably needed to meet their natural end with NXT and explore other options, and that still would have happened under Triple H. But you just never know. You really don't. But I think it is pretty safe to say there is a good amount of NXT talents that wouldn't have left if Triple H was in charge. Overall, though, it seems like the talent pool is going to be a lot stiffer for competition-wise. Hope that made sense. That didn't make any sense. Essentially, I think it's going to be harder for AEW to sign as many indie talents as they were before. And I think WWE, with Triple H at the head of talent relations and creative, it's going to be an interesting few months to see what that looks like, what new hires are going to be in WWE, and whether or not AEW is going to be able to continue to, retain big names that were maybe bound for WWE. But speaking of which, Tony Khan had some things to say about that, basically just saying, ain't nobody leaving. We have big 5-year, multi-year deals with a lot of our top talent, like Adam Cole. So he doesn't expect anyone changing sides all willy-nilly like the 90s, which I don't think anyone did either, just because we kind of know how the contract situation goes nowadays compared to back then, where seemingly Sid can show up on WCW, ECW, and WWE all in the same week. So that's kind of crazy. So yeah, but not everyone seems to think that this change is really for any better. One of these people is AEW World Champion CM Punk. He was quoted at San Diego Comic-Con as saying that the retirement of Vince McMahon won't really stop the culture that's already there. He points out how Brock Lesnar's walkout was treated very differently than Sasha Banks and Naomi's, even his own walkout, how they publicly look to embarrass them or whatever. So yeah, I mean, that's the thing. CM Punk, obviously, he has his bias, him not getting along with Triple H, and I'm sure there's legitimate heat there that's justified. But I don't know. I'm optimistic that the culture is going to change, but I'm not there, man. CM Punk has been there. He's been in that backstage, And so we're going to just see how this all plays out. But I'm really hoping that CM Punk is wrong. I'm really hoping that the culture in WWE is looking to change. Speaking about change in company culture, AEW had a little bit of drama go on before their Death Before Dishonor show with their, at the time, Ring of Honor World Champion, Jonathan Gresham. Apparently there was a big shouting match between himself and Tony Khan after just like a cycle of miscommunications, I guess, or no communication. Jonathan Gresham trying to get a hold of Tony Khan, and you know, there's agents that were in place like QT Marshall, and them telling them, you know, this is the creative plans, but Jonathan Gresham not liking those plans, which were reportedly mostly about him being a heel now. Yeah, he didn't like that he was going to be a heel and lose the title, and which, you know, totally justified. You got to speak your piece about that stuff. And so when he eventually was able to speak to Tony Khan, apparently things got pretty loud, and doesn't look like Jonathan Gresham is going to be with AEW anymore. Reportedly, he asked for his release from the company, which is a bummer. It's a big bummer because Jonathan Gresham is great, and, you know, you just hate to see this. That's like the big... This is a big stories going on this week, you guys. We'll talk about it later. Matt Riddle is also in the news, but for SummerSlam stuff. I think we can hold off until we talk about Monday Night Raw. That's the news. That's the big stuff. I don't know, man. It's weird to think about all this, like how monumental of a change we're going through in the wrestling industry, and like you still have to wait a little bit, because even though this was the first week without Vince at Gorilla, there's probably still a lot. Actually, no, there are. There's a lot of storylines in place that just can't be reared off and stuff like that. You know what I mean? So I feel like you're still gonna see a little bit of that Vince-isms just in this transition period. Just let those storylines kind of die off before you get your first batch of fresh stories with Triple H in charge there. But then also, it's going to be interesting to see how AEW responds to these changes. You know, they might not be able to just be as comfortable as they are now with their formula of having Dynamite be, you know, match talk, women's match talk, main event. They might have to start exploring new routes to gain the attention of their fan base, because let's be honest, if Triple H makes his product more wrestling focused, like I think he's already doing, that's a big portion of what makes AEW so unique, is their focus on in-ring action. And while their styles are, of course, going to be different and the talent's different, you know, it's just how much great wrestling can you really watch? I watch plenty, but you know what I mean? The casual audience or whoever. All this stuff is crazy. It's gonna be a real roller coaster to watch the next few months, even the next couple of years, to see how everything turns out and who sticks around in which company. And I don't know. I think this is gonna be a fun time to be a pro wrestling fan, which it already was. It already really was a fun time. That's the news. Sorry, I like went off on a little bit of tangent. I was trying to get that thought out. You know how you have that thought that's just stuck right in the middle of that brain canal, and then you're trying to push it out, and I think I got it. I think I did, at least. Let's just dive in. This is going to be a little bit of a wonky order, but I want to dive in with Ring of Honor's Death Before Dishonor card just because it happened on Saturday. I'm just going to let the Friday Night SmackDown kind of be forgotten because it was kind of forgettable. Ring of Honor, Death Before Dishonor. We start off the main card, with Claudio Castagnoli capturing the world title in less than 15 minutes. Jonathan Gresham didn't even come out in his octopus mask and robe, just a plain old merch tee, and he didn't get much offense in. And it kind of sucks because this match could have been really, really good. It could have been as good as the Zack Sabre Jr. match, if not better. I don't think these competitors were really in that headspace to do that. But I'm glad that, you know, the I mean, I'm glad Jonathan Gresham like did business. It doesn't make him look bad at all. You know, if anything, it just makes this win a little bit weird, a little tainted, and that sucks for Claudio. It's kind of like the thing with Wardlow and MJF. Coming off of that, you're like, well, that wasn't really what we're supposed to have happen. And it still tainted his legacy so far. And I'm trying not to let that affect my like view of Claudio's reign. I really want Claudio to feel like a world champion. It's just this match didn't get him there. And so I'm hoping his next few defenses will be those solidifying points for him. Because this is his first world title run, believe it or not. And that's crazy because Claudio is just an outstanding wrestler. But yeah, he looks great with that title too. They just released a photo shoot today or yesterday that he just looks great. But after that, we had Don Castle and the boys defeating the Righteous for the Ring of Honor six-man tag team championships. I like Don Castle, and I think this trios division could be a lot of fun. But we're going to talk about a lot of trios stuff later too. So yeah. Next up, we had the pure wrestling championship. Wheeler Yuta taking on Daniel Garcia. This was stiff, very fun match. But in the end, Yuta pulls out a win here. Garcia keeps his heat by flipping off Yuta after the match and like the entire crowd. Yeah, just really good stuff. Following that up, we have a Brudda match that is really good stuff. It's Roosh taking on his real life brother Dragon Lee in a tremendous match that on any other card would have been the match of the night. Definitely seek this one out. A lot of great lucha fun here with still some hard-hitting stuff. But yeah, following this, we had Mercedes Martinez defending her title against Serena Deeb. These two had really good chemistry, but very AEW of this to not really have a lot of heat. So that was a little unfortunate, but the match was still pretty good. Following this, we have Samoa Joe taking on Jay Lethal. Jay Lethal and his buddies kind of get the jump on Joe before the match starts, but it doesn't really matter because in the end, Joe reverses an O'Connor roll into the Coquina Clutch for the submission win. And then main event time, we have FTR taking on the Briscoes in a 2 out of 3 falls match for the Ring of Honor Tag Team Championships. FTR retain their titles. Just go watch this one. This is one of those that's going to make everybody's match of the year list. I preferred their first one, but I was there live, so it's not a fair assessment. But yeah, this is a really good one. And it may not be the end of their feud. The Briscoes just released a fiery promo about them. So we're going to see how this goes. One of them has a great line. I think it's Jay. He's like, everyone keeps saying these matches are fucking good. I don't give a fuck about these matches. I hate these matches. Why do they keep beating us? It's good stuff. I really enjoy it. Following that, let's just dive into Raw. Okay, let's start off the Triple H era. So this is the first Raw under Triple H. Apparently Vince may have written the script, but obviously it was changed as much as it could be by the game Triple H. Raw was in Madison Square Garden and it was a hot crowd. Good crowd, honestly, really good crowd. It was Rey Mysterio's 20th year anniversary or celebration or whatever, and that made me feel really old, but I like it. They had a great video package about him. It was really good stuff, really touching stuff for a guy that I absolutely love, that I don't have enough t-shirts of, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. I have one, but it barely fits. Barely fits me. But anyways, great opening to start off Raw with it just cutting into an active brawl between Logan Paul and The Miz. I love it. It made just the show feel alive right out the gate, which, you know, it very often doesn't. And then we get a Bloodline segment that I think is splitting opinions. I think a lot of people, I don't know. I'm in the camp of I loved it, but I understand that it didn't make Theory look good. Essentially, Roman called out Theory, said that your daddy's not here anymore. Crowd started chanting, "Who's your daddy?" Roman immediately bites onto this and is just like in the complete power position. He's treating Theory like he's like a Like, you're the older brother and this is your baby cousin type relationship. You know, you have no, there's no threat to you in your hierarchy. And Theory looked desperate. I think Theory played his part really well of like the embarrassed guy who is extremely insecure now and just wants to prove himself that he is that guy that's going to beat Roman. And this was fun. This was just a really fun segment. Jey Uso slapping Austin Theory on the back of his neck on the way out and then getting hit with the briefcase and Roman holding him back like, duh, it's not really worth it, is one of my favorite things I've seen all year. It's up there with Walter ripping off Drew Gulak's shirt to give him a chop backstage. That's how good it was for me. I enjoyed it so much. But yeah, like I said, I don't know if this helps Theory, but God, I don't even know how you can help Theory at this point. They really saddled him with that briefcase at the worst possible time. This should have been Seth Rollins' briefcase. It just should have been. It made way more sense. And now they're just going to have to deal with the consequences of this, you know? But anyways, let's not harp on that too much. Because we also have the biggest turnaround of the year. Judgment Day on Raw was fantastic. If they keep this up, Judgment Day could be the faction of that I've been wanting to see, you know? It was so good. Essentially, Judgment Day, they lose their match to the Mysterios. Whatever. You know, it's Rey's 20 if he's got to win the match. But when the Mysterios are backstage celebrating with cake and everything else, Rhea Ripley comes in wearing an I'm Your Poppy t-shirt. Fantastic. Fantastic detail. She palms Dominic and starts whooping everyone's ass. It's so good. Yeah, I want more of this. Finn Balor had a great, like, trash talk bit where Ray was like, it's my celebration, and Finn's like, it's my birthday. He's fucking kicking his ass still. It's so good. I really enjoyed that. If we get more of that, I'll be very happy with this. Next up though, it wasn't all great, right? It's still Raw. It's 3 hours. They gotta fill time. So they gave Logan Paul a talk show. Wasn't good. I don't care about this match, obviously. I don't like Logan Paul on my TV. I'm just excited for him to get off of it. But we did get something interesting, too. We got Alexa Bliss making the call to the Women's Championship. So that's really good. Especially the segment, it felt alive. She acknowledged her challenges with Nikki Cross and Doudrop. And just like, why are they teaming? Kind of like breaking the fourth wall there. But then also acknowledged that she's not letting that blind her from what she really wants, and that's the Women's Championship. So I really liked it. It felt organic. It felt good. And then we got a really good main event. The Bloodline taking on Riddle and the Street Profits. Montez started bleeding under his eye, so hopefully he's okay from that. I know a lot of people were like Cody Rhodes seeing Montez bleeding and getting like frothing at the mouth. But yeah, it just seemed like an accident. They were pushing pretty hard that Montez and Dawkins's relationship as the Street Profits, obviously, being Sean and Marty Jannetty, and pushing that Dawkins is out to prove he's not the Marty of the team. So we'll see. That's gonna sound like a jump cut, but it wasn't. I just like switched directions on my own sentence. Last time I talked about how I wanted Dawkins to turn heel on Montez. I thought that they were going to turn Dawkins heel on Montez, and I felt that Montez should be actually that guy to turn heel. I still stand by it. I think I still stand by it because Montez is just going to be charismatic no matter what. Dawkins getting turned on, getting betrayed from someone who he felt was his brother is still a really good route you can go on. And then with the brand split coming, he can go on to SmackDown. And as long as they give him a consistent enough push, I think he'll be okay. But that's a lot of ifs. So we'll see. But anyways, Riddle also gets stomped by Seth onto the stairs, which was very reminiscent of what he did in like 2015 to Randy Orton. But this has officially ridden him off the SummerSlam card. So now Seth Rollins does not have a match scheduled for SummerSlam. I think that will change either tomorrow or sorry, today, since you're listening to this on Friday, or at SummerSlam itself, I think he might just have an open challenge match of some sort. And so there's obviously a lot of speculation about this, from Johnny Gargano to Bray Wyatt. I honestly would expect something way less than that. I'm kind of just expecting like LA Knight or someone like that. Someone that's already kind of on the roster that maybe hasn't had the push that Triple H would like to have seen. So yeah, I wouldn't put it past him to also call someone up in this opportunity. But then again, there's still a chance that Seth just won't have a match at all. So we'll see. I would love to see Carmelo Hayes. I would absolutely love that. I would also love to see Johnny Gargano. I think that would be just a stellar match, right? And you can't go wrong with Gargano versus Rollins. So we'll see. We'll see how this goes. So let's jump companies to AEW. They had Dynamite, Fight for the Fallen. This was a really good Dynamite for developing younger talent. And it's something I feel like they haven't done in a while, is focus on this young talent. And I think that's just because they feel a little more secure in the timeline for their big talent to come back. And so they're like, okay, let's set these things up so that way when they get back, we have a good mix of young talent getting their time in and also big talent, you know? I hope that's at least what it is. I hope that is. So we'll see. But some of the big things coming out of Dynamite: Chris Jericho basically wants a world title opportunity. Jon Moxley told him not to tell him he's the interim world champion. He's the real world's champion. And that he wants to face the Lionheart. So that's going to be a good match, maybe. We'll see. It'll be in 2 weeks. Commentary then officially also announced AEW has trios titles. The titles look good. They look like New Japan's tag titles, but with more of a NXT UK tag title look, if that makes any sense, like a kind of amalgamation of the two. They announced that there's going to be a tournament soon and the finals will take place at All Out, but there were no teams announced for that. Some potential teams that people are speculating are like Kenny and the Bucks or Hangman Page and the Bucks, the Undisputed Elite, Orange Cassidy and Best Friends. Yeah, there's just like, that's a really good, the House of Black, Death Triangle. The trios division is going to be absolutely loaded. So yeah, that should be fun to see. I think the first trios champions, I don't know, I think it might be, let's do some reckless predictions. There's nobody in the tournament even. Who would I put there? Probably House of Black. I think that's like a good spot for them. But I don't want them to start another feud with Death Triangle, so maybe not. Yeah, but let's just go House of Black. I think they just look cool with those titles, right? But then also we have the FTW champion, Ricky Starks, taking on Danhausen. And he won that pretty fast with a spear. So then he's like, you know what? This time for real, I'm going to offer another open challenge. And the crowd already knows it's Hook. They start chanting it. Hook comes out. We got a pretty decent little match that sees Hook lock in the Red Rum for the title that his father created. It's a great moment. We get a little fist bump from Ricky and Hook before going to commercial. Coming back from commercial, Ricky Starks cuts a really genuine promo about how, you know, people thought that title was a noose and he made it mean something, and just he deserves more than 40 seconds. It was really good. Just like a real coming out moment for Ricky Starks, really embracing that babyface nature in him. But then, oh boy, Powerhouse Hobbs just clobbers him from behind. Just hits him once, drops the fool, picks him up, hits a nasty spine buster, and Taz doesn't know what to do. He's like, oh my God, what just happened here? And I'll be honest, I wasn't watching live, right? I was at a dinner party with some friends, and I saw this on AEW's Instagram. Turned up the volume to hear the promo, and I look at the screen, and right as I thought it was done, Powerhouse Hobbs hit him, and I was like, oh my God. I gasped. I felt emotional. I didn't see this coming at all, and I didn't want it to happen. But, you know, I think this is going to be a really good thing for both men. It's going to develop them as characters even further. I think this feud, hopefully if they feud, is going to be really, really good. So I'm really excited about this. Powerhouse Hobbs being like the rogue agent of Team Taz, where he's not agreeing with Taz anymore. Like, we're supposed to be heels. We're supposed to beat people up. You know, that'd be great. That'd be absolutely great. And then we get something that this is overwhelmingly people like it. So I get that I'm in the minority here, but I don't like this Jungle Boy Christian Cage stuff. It's not my thing. I always measure wrestling to one standard, really. If someone walked in on me watching this, how embarrassed would I be? And this, to me, is embarrassing. Not in the same way as, like, Happy Corbin is, where I would cringe at the TV. It's just, like, a little try-hard. A little, yeah, I mean, try-hard's it. It's just, the language in it is just whatever. It's not good. It's like being raunchy for raunchy's sake. They're trying to inject heat in here that I don't necessarily think there is. So I don't know. I think this needs to be reined back a little bit. But again, I know I'm in the minority. I know people love this feud. But essentially, Jungle Boy comes out and he calls Christian Cage the P word. I'm not going to say it, man. That's just, I've long ago dropped that word out of my vocabulary. And then he talks about Christian's divorce. He does like the call me sign. And then Christian shows up. He's watching this promo on TV, WWE style. And he kind of just says he's going to murder Jungle Boy. He's like, you don't have to worry about me disrespecting your dead dad, 'cause you're going to be laying next to him. And that's messed up. I don't like it, man. It's not my thing. What is my thing though, is the Young Bucks run into Adam Page later on in the back, and they just like give each other a hello, like, oh, I know your birthday is coming up, like really cute, really soft. I love it. I cannot wait to see them reunite. And then Dark Order like kind of interrupts the whole thing, which is good too. Dark Order too, OMG, trios titles for them. But then also we get like this weird Swerve Strickland and Tony Nese and Mark Sterling match, right, which is good. It's a good match. But while the match is happening, Keith Lee is laid out by Josh Woods. And it's just like, I don't know. I just don't get it, right? Like, I don't really get why Josh Woods would sign with Mark Sterling. We'll see where this leads. Tony Nese and Josh Woods going to be a tag team, I guess. I don't know. Not the most interesting thing in the world. I think you have better established tag teams to actually feud with these guys, like Private Party. But you know, Josh Woods is a good wrestler. I got to see him live, and I think that's the only match I've ever seen of him losing to Wheeler Yuta. Josh Woods just seems like too serious of a guy to be in this group, so we'll see. Maybe he'll add a new layer of character though, you never know. Also, Brody King challenged Darby Allin to a casket match, and Malachi Black delivers like this sermon to Miro saying that God and the devil are essentially the same person, which, sure, if you choose to believe that, either way, Miro's gonna kick their ass. So, and then we get the main event that was a shocker. Bryan Danielson taking on Daniel Garcia. Garcia earlier had like an interview saying, you slip up once, it's over, and it happened. Bryan gets caught in the apron because Jake Hager was under the apron grabbing his foot. He goes into the ring and Daniel Garcia locks him up. I think the sharpshooter, if I'm not wrong, and gets the pass out victory. Very good stuff though. A really fun match. Bryan just always goes extra hard on his return matches, and this was one of those moments. But it signals, you know, this is not the end of the Blackpool Combat Club and Jericho Appreciation Society feud, because even the lower rung guys are still fighting. So I don't know. I think they're still probably just in a tough position with everyone being injured, but you could have moved on. I think both of these teams and factions could have found new rivals by now, so we'll see. I think they're overstaying their welcome just a little bit, but I'll never complain about a Bryan Danielson and Daniel Garcia main event. So, you know. So let's move on now. I know this has been a really hodgepodge of a review, but whatever. We got SummerSlam to talk about, and I'm going to do my official SummerSlam predictions here without seeing the go-home. I know that this Friday, the only thing that's announced so far is Drew McIntyre taking on Sheamus in that, like, street fight. Winner will face Roman, spoiler alert, Roman, at Clash at the Castle. So that should be a really good match for SmackDown. But I don't really anticipate any more matches being added to the SummerSlam card. So I think this is going to be a pretty safe prediction. So watch that. Watch five more matches be added. I don't really think so, though. So let's start things off with the SmackDown Women's Championship match. Liv Morgan taking on Ronda Rousey. I'm going to be honest, you guys. I think Liv Morgan is going to lose here. I kind of don't want to bet against her because they got Clash of the Castle coming up, and I don't think that Ronda's going to do it. She'll travel for that. But you never know. She might. It just feels like they're not going to give her that win, you know? She deserves to have that win. But I don't know if they'll do it. You know what? Screw it. Liv Morgan's winning. She's going to win clean against Ronda, and Ronda's going to leave for a little while. That's it. That's the prediction. And then Ronda will come back right before Mania, maybe at the Rumble, and, you know, beat up Charlotte or something. Yeah, that's sure. Liv Morgan there. Will Bayley be there? That's a good little side note. I think Bayley will come back on SmackDown, the next SmackDown. Don't know. I don't think she'll be at SummerSlam. Well, you know, because if Liv wins and then Bayley comes out, I think that's the only chance you have of Bayley coming to SummerSlam. If Ronda wins, I don't see Bayley doing anything because I think they want to keep Bayley a heel. So we'll see. I'm betting on Liv for now with no Bayley. Actually, no, I'm going to bet on Liv with Bayley. Bayley comes out at the end, gives her a Bayley to belly. So moving on, Raw Women's Championship match, Bianca Belair taking on Becky Lynch. This will be Bianca's redemption. She will beat Becky in 20-something seconds. I think that's guaranteed to happen, and it's going to pop the crowd huge when it does. United States Championship match, Bobby Lashley taking on Theory. I think Lashley's got this one in the bag. I don't think they care much about making Theory look strong with his Money in the Bank, so I think it'll be fine. I'm kind of hoping Bobby Lashley, like, does, like, a post-match beatdown or something on Theory so we don't have Theory for the rest of the night, but I kind of doubt it. Logan Paul taking on The Miz. I think this is pretty cut and dry. Logan Paul's going to win this one, and then Tommaso Ciampa will either turn on The Miz or beat up Logan Paul to defend The Miz, and that'll write off Logan Paul from having to show up until possibly the Rumble. Definitely the Rumble. He'll probably be one of those, like, fun spots in the Rumble, you know? So, Logan Paul's going to win this one. Undisputed WWE Tag Team title match with special guests, hometown boy Jeff Jarrett. I don't want to see Jeff Jarrett, but we're going to. So, the Usos taking on the Street Profits. I think the Usos got this one. I think the special guest referee is going to backfire. Jeff Jarrett's only around to ever hit someone with the guitar, and I think he's going to hit, like, Dawkins with the guitar or something, or Montez, one of the two. But I definitely think that the guitar is coming out, and the Usos will win. Pat McAfee taking on Happy Corbin. Pat McAfee pretty easily. This should be, honestly, this is a sleeper of a match, to be honest. I wouldn't be surprised if Pat McAfee, like, I don't know, if he does some crazy spot, like some Shane McMahon-esque spot, you know, jumping from, like, the ring post to the announce table, you know, something like that. That'd be pretty cool. I think it's going to be pretty kind of dry. No Seth Rollins match. My prediction is that, I don't know, this is tough. I'm going to predict that he's going to face, I don't know. I want to say Gargano. Like, Gargano is that guy that I'm thinking of, right? Like, that's one way for Triple H to make a huge impact right off the bat is rehiring Gargano, right? Let's just say it. Sure, why not? There's no stakes here, guys. I want to make stakes for these, like, eventually, but for now, no stakes, so I'm just going to be wild with it. Seth Rollins versus Gargano, and Gargano wins, and it'll be good, and it'll keep on the string of Seth Rollins, like, losing open challenges and just blaming it on being an open challenge, you know? Let's get to this main event. A match I really am, like, so nervous about because I don't want Theory to cash in, but it's the Undisputed Universal Championship match. Last man standing, Roman Reigns taking on Brock Lesnar. I think Roman's going to win. I really think that. I think I'm like 92% confident about that. Will Theory cash in? No. I'm going to say no. I don't want this kid to have a failed cash in, man. I really don't. And if we can just wait out the time for Cody Rhodes to beat Roman and then get cashed in on, and Theory has had like a really good change of character, it could happen. It could maybe happen. He can become one of the youngest WWE champions ever. But I don't know. I'm really not sure. They are in such a pickle with this stupid briefcase on him right now. So I'm really stressed. I just don't really see Brock leaving with titles, though. I think he's going to be done. His walkout on SmackDown was pretty clear that he doesn't want to be there without Vince McMahon, or he's probably going to renegotiate his contract since Vince McMahon is gone. So I don't know. I really don't. We're going to definitely have to see about that. But I think for now, Brock is kind of like done with the company in that sense until they figure something else out. So yeah, Roman Reigns wins and no cash out. That's how I'm ending SummerSlam on that note. This is how I'm ending the podcast. So yeah, you guys, let me know, you know, what you guys think about SummerSlam. Because it feels stressful. It feels like a stressful show. But I think it's still going to be a lot of fun. I'll talk to you guys later. Please stay safe. And remember to follow the channel at Hold for Hold everywhere. Twitter, Instagram, somewhere else that I'm not on. But yeah, Twitter, Instagram, at Hold for Hold. Thank you guys for listening. If you can, please leave a rating and review wherever you're listening to this podcast. It really, really helped the show. Because I like little stars. I'm trying to get Dave Meltzer to give me a rating, a star rating on one of my episodes. Hopefully not this one, because I feel like it wasn't that great. But maybe one of the really good ones. I'll like send them a link. But anyways, have a good one, you guys. Thank you.